Well, you know, during the period of time when Pakistan and all the kids were dying of hunger all over the place, and I was all on television, we could sit there and watch it and eat our dinner. Your mind becomes so acclimated to that stuff, and it's so terrible that you can do that, you know, and not get sick to your stomach and stuff like that. Even now, the atrocity that are committed all over this world, you're watching on television, you're so immune to that stuff. It's terrible. But if you don't, you're going to go crazy.
Yep.
You know, the newspaper, the radio, the television, everything else. So anyway, we, I'm trying to think of the name of the town. We liberated Maine. Maine? No. Yeah, somewhere. Anyway, the town of Daco is located next to a big city.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who lived there denied they ever knew there was a concentration camp there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You could smell it miles away. They all worked there.
Mm-hmm.
See? Munich was the place.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Daco was. So we moved out from there, and we went to, Austria. At that time, the war was over. Roosevelt had died, and Truman had taken over. And they signed a truce, an armistice, and stuff like that. I think May the 5th. And we went into near the town in Austria. Anyway, the Germans had surrendered, and our job then was to go up in the mountains and pull down all the prisoners of war and take all their weapons away from them and get them all squared away. I'm so sorry, my memory is so bad.
No,
but something I want to go back a little bit to. Well, anyway, we started up there and we got them all down. And at that time, the Army was sending people home on a point system.
Mm-hmm.
How long you were in service, you got a couple of points for that. And how many kids you had, you got 12 points for that and all that stuff. How many months you were away and all that stuff. So I was on the second troop once to go home.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that coming up, I forget all some of this stuff. Prior to coming up, we coming up through the south, and we got to a place called it's a town where Yolanda Nelson came from. In Alsace-Lorraine, Strasbourg.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy and I got trapped out of patrol. We were checking out a cognac factory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gotta have a drink with it.
Of course.
We got trapped in an alley though, and the Germans were beating out, they're moving in on us and stuff like this. And there was a door right here, and that door opened, and we got in there and got out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And this family rescued us, saved our lives and stuff like that. Because the other guys come in and clean those drive-ins up and everything else. And we became very friendly with these people, beautiful, wonderful people. I got pictures in here somewhere of the family and everything else. And Grandma gave me a locket for Virginia,
mm-hmm.
which is inscribed in German as Fass ein Mal, once upon a time, the start of all fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
And an Alsatian doll that I shipped home. Anyway, it was a beautiful affair and everything else. We had a group picture. Well, when I come home and I found out that Yolanda was from Alsace-Lorraine, I told her about this place. And her mother used to come over here and visit, her mother and aunt. We got to talking, and my little smattering of German, I was able to convey whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So they went back and looked for it. Whenever Yolanda went back to visit the folks, they go look for this place, for the cognac factory.
Uh-huh.
And they never found it but once. They were going to the north, and we were coming from the south, you see. So when they backtracked, they found the place, but
uh-huh.
the family was gone. I thought that was very nice, you know, stuff like that. I think somewhere in here I got a picture of him. And it was a lovely thing. So that's how that thing worked out. So we had a mutual understanding of what the place was like, that everything. And Yolanda remembers when the troops were, my unit came through there. She remembers that she was a small child, but she remembered the blue and white patch that we had.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's nice. Isn't that nice?
That's so odd that those kind of stories all converge here. In
yeah.
Little tiny
places. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Especially with Ken Nibbler.
Yeah.
Me trying to kill him.
Exactly. That's just
yeah.
strange. Hmm.
Yeah, a lot of the retirees come out of Fort Lewis, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My division was here for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they went overseas and everything else, and I was fully involved with the military society of it. I stayed in the reserves and retired as a command sergeant major, the most senior sergeant major in the state of Washington. Mm-hmm. I'm just reading my citation here. And then had a good life, you know. Mm-hmm. We had David, and we had a good, you know, it was really nice. And the best thing that ever happened to us was coming out here to this island. Mm-hmm. Beautiful place.
So how did you make it out here to the island?
Well, Ruth was, and her next door neighbor, the one that John bought from us, Alice Hamilton, were buying and selling real estate. Mm-hmm. And they saw this in the paper. Mm-hmm. And I was on active duty at Yakima. And Ruth used to come up during the middle weekend, you know, and we'd stay over there, and we'd have a big parade up there and everything else. And she was talking to some other people. She said, I walked into the dining room, we were going to have dinner, and I heard her say, I haven't told them yet. You haven't told me why. She said, well, I'll tell you later. Well, apparently they saw this ad in the paper. They come over here from Sears, Allstate. Mm-hmm. They bought it right on the spot.
Really?
Yeah. It was the most wonderful decision they ever made in their life, because you know how beautiful it is. Mm-hmm. And she bought it from Ben Johnson, Russ's great uncle, mm-hmm. Johnny's great uncle. And that's how we got out here. And we met, of course, the first person we met here was Junior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And wonderful people, they're just absolutely fantastic.
So at that point, had your house been built?
No. In fact, Will Ross, mm-hmm. this friend of mine, he came out to the first time he's been out here since 1966, 67. Mm-hmm. 66, where we bought the land. He and Gene come out here with a big pickup truck, and they were going to help me clear the land, make the road out.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to clear all the brush and see what we had down there. And he had a pickup. And you know what a potato fork is, a potato hook? It's a curved thing like you pull potatoes out mm-hmm. of the ground.
Okay. Yeah, I know what
you're. We had one of those, because we used them in the fire department all the time for getting into dumpsters and things like mm-hmm. that. And my lovely son was out here, and I saw that the time was upside down, so I put it away. And I was up on the edge of the truck, on the sideboard of the pickup, and I was limbing a branch up there to get around. And I stepped down right after those tines and said, ouch.
I'm sure he did.
All through
my foot. I thought he would have said a little bit more than
that. No, said ouch. Well, Junior got his boat and he took me over to Steilacoom.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a hold of the police over there, Steilacoom cops. And the guy that picked me up was a retired military policeman who I knew.
Huh. Yes, sir.
Where? Only in America, right?
Right.
And then he took me up to the old Lakewood Hospital, you see.
Uh-huh.
And who's on that duty? My doctor. See? So he gave me a shot, and he put a Band-Aid on it, he says, there's nothing much, you're okay, going home.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wearing sneakers at the time, stupid that I was. So I come back to the cop waited for me, and mm-hmm. brought me back to the ferry. And Junior met me on the other side, mm-hmm. and brought me down. And about that time, my foot was about that big. It was swollen up and everything else. And I couldn't find my son, because I'd have killed him. You see.
Mm-hmm.
And, so anyway, that's how we got out of there. And then on this last salmon bake, when Will and his wife come out here, that's the first time they've been back.
Huh.
Since 1966. We were down the house, he'd looking all over the place. You could hardly recognize anything. You know.
That's neat.
Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're very good friends. I lived at DuPont for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
See? And so we made a lot of good friends over there. And Will and I were both in the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
And, whatever. They're wonderful people. All the people. DuPont people are nice. But they're more nice over here. They're just fantastic over here. So that's how we got over here. And we, let's see. And we bought the place and we built the house in 67. Bob, Eric and Lowell Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And they cleaned out both places. They built where John lives now first.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to call that our house. And my friend Gene didn't like that. I said, well, what do you want me to do? That's where we go to the bathroom before ours was built. Anyway, they're both gone now. Anyway, he sold the house to, they were real estate people. They were just buying and selling.
Mm-hmm.
And Ruth was going to sell this place.
Mm-hmm.
And when I retired, because all my off days were spent over here.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for the fire department. I worked as a firefighter, 24 hour on and 24 off.
Mm-hmm.
I worked out those shifts for 22 years.
Wow.
Okay. So every other weekend, the middle of the week was our day off. So we'd always come over here.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we cleaned every place up, and called out the trees. I fell every day, cut down 361 trees to clear that area out. Ruth and I used to come in there and burn that stuff. Fell in love with everybody, the hummingbirds, the deer, And most of the trees were little long cherry trees. Mm-hmm. And we left a whole bunch out there before we burned them one day. We were so dark tired. What happened is Lowell had built the shell of the house. And the front of it was all open on the patio down below. Mm-hmm. And a 32-gallon garbage can. And we used to fill it with water. And Ruth and I both take a bath in there all the time. And not together because we couldn't fit. I was big and she was small. But anyway, we had a little table that we put up on the porch. And we used to have our suppers out there. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we cut all those branches down, all those trees down. We had them piled up ready to burn. And here come Mama with a couple of does, little bambies. And they were eating all these wonderful, succulent cherry blossom, cherry trees, the blossom. So we always left a whole bunch out for them all the time. Mm-hmm. And the hummers were really out of this world. We had a thing up here, we ate out there, they come right in front of your face. Mm-hmm. And we had the feeders right out in front of us all the time. Once in a while they bang into the window and you pick them up and pet them, you know, and they come back and thank you. Mm-hmm. They were just wonderful. They still are.
Do you feel like your connection to nature changed when you moved out here?
I fell in love with the place for a long time, but until I moved out here. Anyway, getting back to that, before I answer your question, I had retired in 77, and I says to her, I retired in April, and I said to her, let's go to the island. I want to move to the island. She says, okay, you want to go to the island? We'll go. I said, no, we're going to move there. Well, to Florida, because she was getting ready to sell it. Mm-hmm. Said, no, you're not selling this. We bought it, not you. So that was in September. And I was out mowing the lawn at the house in DuPont, and a fellow and a little dog come walking up. He said, nice place, I thank you. You want to sell it? Yes. How much you want? I told him. He said, I'll be right back. I said, come back with a check, and don't haggle me. He brought his wife back, and 30 days later, they threw us out of their house. Huh. We had two of everything. And you know, as you well know, you're over here. So that's why we moved on the island.
Wow.
And it was just great. And of course, during the time we were here, I met Jim Morrison, mm-hmm. who was a volunteer for the Washington State Fire Service training thing. They had a whole bunch of fire chiefs, civilian fire chiefs, used to go out and train all the volunteer fire departments. So he was out of DuPont to show that we wanted a truck out
right.
there. And he was showing the guys how to run the pump and everything else, and I met him over here. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know he's over here. And I never met his wife. I never met Evelyn before, you know, until we come out here. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we got to be pretty good friends. And of course, Jim had a lot of problems mentally and everything else, stuff like that. But he and I, he got me interested in starting a fire department. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got involved in it. And it's been a delight ever since. I love it. Mm-hmm. I'm so proud of that fire department. They're really fantastic. And great people. And Pete, of course, everybody's so dedicated to them. But we had training here in order to get certified to get a fire district for them. Mm-hmm. I had to get 10 firefighters certified. Mm-hmm. And as much as I was on the federal side of firefighting, I had to become a qualified state instructor.
Right.
Thank you. And I had to go to Silverdale up by Bremerton over there, mm-hmm. 2 weekends in a row. And I almost didn't make it for first day of firefighting. Luckily, the chief who was instructor over there passed me out of pity. So I got my certificate and I got back here. And I started to train everybody. We had up at the community club. Mm-hmm. Now, there wasn't very many young people here at that time. There was Gladys Bolton, there was Kay Snyder, Andy was old at that time, a whole bunch of other people that were older, and I had to train all of those, mm-hmm. you see. To get 10 bodies before John got into there, there was Larry Anderson, mm-hmm. What's his name?
Wiggins.
The very first, and several other fellows over here. And as the younger people come in, I was trying to get rid or disengage all the older people. Mm-hmm. Well, Kay, I don't know if you remember Kay Snyder, but she was about as big as you are.
Mm-hmm.
She lived up in the house right off, by the going to the entrance to the campground. Where
the green house?
The green one.
I vaguely remember her.
Yeah, that's, she had a little dog. She used
mm-hmm.
to, very, very religious Catholic, used to walk to church all the time. Anyway, we were having a ladder drill at the community club. And I'm trying to tell the older people that you're just not strong enough to do what the work you have to do. You have to climb a ladder. You have to wear all this heavy equipment, clothing. And you have to carry a nozzle up there with you. So I said to Kay, she was going to go up, and she had a foot. I said, okay, Kay. I put a coat on her. I didn't put any pants on her because the coat went right down to the floor.
Right.
Okay? And I put a helmet on her and tied it all up and put a nozzle. At that time, we didn't have the little light nozzle. This one was about that big.
Come on.
And it weighed about 30 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
She took one step up there and she fell to the ground. Couldn't get up until we took her clothes off.
Oh, no.
It was terrible. And she was so mad at me. I said, see, I'm trying to tell you, Kay, that you're not strong enough to do all this stuff. And none of the other ladies would even get near the place, as far as that's concerned.
Uh-huh.
So little by little, we got the guys interested in it and stuff like this, you see. And I got really involved in getting the petitions and all that stuff signed for the people and all that stuff. Had lots of meetings. So we had to find a place to put it.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, Heritage was out here with the Riviera people. And I went to them and I said, the only place we really put it was where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold me an acre of land for $900.
Mm-hmm.
With the money that they were going to give me back the money. You see. Yeah. Because they had to have it on their records that they sold it.
They sold it. But it was really it was just a donation.
It was a donation. Instead of giving me money back, they gave me $1,200 worth of office equipment.
Oh.
You couldn't believe the desk and filing cabinets and stuff and all the chairs and all that stuff. It was just more than enough.
Uh-huh.
But we still didn't have a place.
Yeah, you don't have a building yet.
No.
To put all this office equipment in.
Well, the first fire station, when the store was built, it had a real estate office in there. That's where I went and begged for the acre.
Mm-hmm.
Where the snack bar is now.
Right, where Barbara's
studying. Yeah, and where Barbara's cooking area is with my office in there, you see.
Uh-huh.
And then the real estate office is right where the bathroom was. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And so we're in there, and the trucks, when we got the trucks in there, we got the fire district started. Was outside where she has that little built where the storage sheds are.
Uh-huh.
That's where the fire station was. We had to get all kinds of electrical tape, wire, and wrap all the pipes up on the truck during wintertime. They freeze.
Because they freeze because they don't have any place.
Thank you. Anyway, we didn't have any money.
Uh-huh.
And before we were able to buy anything, as far as that's concerned, I had to get, and once we got certified, in order to get qualified as a fire district, the residences and the homes had to be surveyed by the insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
And it's they form what they call a Washington Fire Rating Survey Bureau. The other ones that set how much you pay for insurance, according to fire insurance.
Right.
See, that's the way that thing works.
Gotcha.
So every town and city has, if you read the paper, you know that mm-hmm. people are hurting for trying to, like Lakewood.
Right.
They want this levy passed, or else they go from a class 3 to a class 4,
mm-hmm.
and that would raise
everybody's insurance.
Okay.
Crazy.
So I had to buy a truck. I had to get a truck. I had to have all the hose mounted on. I got 1,000 feet of hose, 1,200 feet of hose, ladders, pike poles, all the stuff to go in, and a pump. And a brain. And I had to get 10 people certified.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pastor at the firefighting tent. So I got involved with the state training people, and got all the manuals and all the books and all that stuff over there and beg and borrow. I went to other fire departments and begged for firefighting gear. I stole from Fort Lewis all the way. I shouldn't have put that down on tape. little items like pike poles and stuff. And the only thing they had out here was Riviera had that little white 600-gallon truck with a pump on it, you see.
Uh-huh.
And a fellow by the name of Harold, was the fire chief out here for Riviera. And that's the first fires we had out here when they burnt Judy Adams' house down, which is, you know, where the hamburger bird was? Where the burger bus was.
Uh-huh.
That was her house was right there.
Oh, really?
And I'm positive she set the fire.
Oh, yeah. Dana remembers that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was, they were, and that, it was field day.
Yeah.
On McNeil when she burnt down her house.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the Adams boys were sitting there on McNeil going, there's a fire on there. Hey, that's
where
my house is.
Judy was there, and her mother was there. They were going to make the ferry. And the 8 o'clock ferry. And I got the call about 8:10. Ross Rick, who was our lineman at that time, was coming by. Judy said she left the house at 8 o'clock. At 5 minutes after 8, Ross called in on his radio, who called us through Tanner. Mm-hmm. The house was fully involved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it had to be some sort of an accelerant.
Right. 5 minutes is not...
It just doesn't go that bad.
It doesn't go that bad, no.
Anyway, it was so suspicious and everything else. And Judy just lost her husband. Mm-hmm. He died on the boat, you know, stuff like that, dropped dead. And she, what, you have six kids?
Yeah, I think she had five or six. Yeah.
And she was the island nurse.
Yep.
Right? So I couldn't say too many bad, but I had the fire marshal out there. We went through that thing. I mean, you see the pattern of where the, when you put an accelerant down, it leaves fingerprints. Uh-huh. Whenever you spill, you know, you spill a glass of water, you got little
right.
tentacles going on.
You can tell
right.
when it's a
fire explosive with something like gasoline or something or kerosene, it leaves a print. Water would evaporate and wouldn't leave anything.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's got kerosene or any kind of oil in it, it leaves a print.
It would leave a film or something.
The print was there, but we couldn't identify what it was. So he dropped it. Anyway, they paid her off, you know, go off like that. And another one was Arvidsson, who was a banker. And we had, that was the first fire we had.
Mm-hmm.
Down on, you know where Bob Reynolds used to live, where Dick Campanella.
By Iron Springs and
yeah,
where
Campanella goes up over there. There's an area where Vickers lives.
Okay.
You go down that road. And Steve, what's his name?
Mark Lovell?
Yeah. And I think Larry was down there, was living there.
Larry.
Anderson, I think.
Oh.
Or Mike, I don't know, maybe Mike was down
there.
Down there. Well, we had that 600-gallon little truck, and we rolled down, and Max Starkinger and all us guys were down there. And the only place that didn't burn down was a place where they had the waterbed.
The
waterbed. They had a waterbed.
Mm-hmm.
When it burned, all the water came out, and it cleaned out all up, see, and that's the part that ever burned. But it belonged to this banker. And those guys were living there, taking care of it, and they put an extra hot fire in there, in the wood for a
fireplace.
But the chimney was about 8 inches in diameter. There was no airspace around it. When I went up and checked it all out, and what it did when it burned, it was so full of soot, and
uh-huh.
the soot kept reigniting all the time, you see, because it's burnable.
Right.
And it was burned big holes in the pipe, which was right up against the wood.
Oh.
And so that's what started.
Yeah. It right over.
And when you do that, you got air that generates wind. That's mm-hmm. what they call firestorms and stuff like that, even how minor that is.
Right.
And accelerates the fire. The more oxygen, so you got to take one of the three triangles of the fire. You got to take away the heat, you got to take away the oxygen, and the fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Then the fire goes out. That's simple. But nobody took any part of that stuff away. I couldn't get contact that banker. He wouldn't answer my calls or anything else. But I finally got a letter from the fire marshal that said that they paid him off.
Yeah.
Yeah. He rebuilt a new house then.
Huh.
And the next one was Judy, you see. No, the next one was where Larry Gordon, Larry Anderson was living, down on Lawson Road. There was a big white house down there, Cape Cod type of house, three stories in a basement,
uh-huh.
which. You know where they built that new road up on Lawson Road, up to the right?
Mm-hmm.
Right across the way from that was this house.
Okay. Yeah, I see.
Yeah, and it, where the guy built, where the apple orchard is and stuff right in there. So anyway, Bernie Higgins was working for Riviera, and he couldn't drive, he didn't know how to drive, and we hear that fire truck coming. The first person I met, when I got the call, the first person I met down there was Ross Rick, who cut the power, you see.
Mm-hmm.
When I got down there, the house had just blown apart. There was so much heat in there that it blew all the windows out, you see.
Oh, my goodness.
Something opened up to allow all that oxygen to come in there, and it just blew it out.
Uh-huh.
We pulled in there. It only had 150 feet of hose, 3 seconds. One 50-foot section was tied up. The other one was laying on the side overhead. And Bernie drove the truck down in. He grabbed the hose. And he ran out with it, and he got knocked on his ass when it pulled up after 50 feet. It was like
a I see, like a little cartoon.
There you go. And all that glass laid around, and people down there in bedroom slippers and sneakers and all that stuff trying to fight that fire. Well, anyway, Andy, I guess everybody knows him by Andy, was living in there with this guy that, God, I can't think of the name, and this guy who mother lived in there. He had taken a bath or a shower, and he had a heater,
mm-hmm.
which was a wire open concave
mm-hmm.
heater. He threw the towel over it to dry off, and he left and went to town.
Oh no!
Well, By that time, he was been shacked up with Betsy. You see, he was living then. And when he come back on the next ferry, he went to Betsy's house.
Mm-hmm.
He never knew the fire was evolving at all. He thought somebody probably called, and we heard all the noise there. When he come out then, when they finally, I took the hose off and put it all in one line, you see.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of calm everybody down, and we will try to save what we can. He had all his tools in the basement.
Uh-huh.
Right outside the door then, $1,000 more worth of tools. And he was a good mechanic, you know. And also, I can't tell you, the mother had beautiful china down there. I guess it was china, but it was not china too to say, it was pottery.
Mm-hmm.
From the old country.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's set for 12 people or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And we didn't know that. And the guys, whoever was on the hose, well, they just opened up their nozzle. We finally got some pressure and blew it all to pieces, you see.
Oh, no.
And the guy that, when she died or got divorced, he was over in Yakima, the guy that Larry, who was a friend with Larry. And he came back. He was going to kill Larry.
Uh-huh.
You see. God, I can't remember the name. Anyway, that was the second fire. And the third fire was Judy's, you see.
Yeah.
Now, the day before we had the election, am I keeping you from anything?
No, you're fine. You're fine.
I had gone to the, we got the petitions for the district and everything else, and I went to the county, and we had to get the planning board all squared and everything all about that. And we had the county auditor write up the thing. But what he wrote up was everything but getting the money. He wrote up forming it. So I go through kissing people's asses all over again to have him run another election. To get the money.
Right.
But I didn't know anything about that. I was just a recruit as far as that's concerned, how these things are done. And he should have known that what he did was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it came through. So we couldn't collect the money until collection day, until April and October, you know, mm-hmm. when the taxes are paid. So I had to go out and borrow money, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to borrow $68,000, and that's how we started off on that.
Mm-hmm.
What they call a coupon warrant, they finally paid them all off and everything else. And I went to this friend of mine in Key Center and got the plans for the fire station that we built.
Mm-hmm.
I used his plans, you see. And he was very, very wonderful to us. And checking out and coming in here and all that stuff. He was really great
mm-hmm.
as far as that's concerned. Anyway, so we got the station built and everything else and started in training and all that stuff over here. And finally, I said, that's enough. 40 years is plenty.
Oh, definitely.
Because when I retired out of Fort Lewis, Ruth took all my white shirts and all my blue shirts, well, the blue shirts went for it, and gave them away. She says, I'm never going to iron or wash another white shirt as long as I live. So when I got to be the fire chief, I didn't go buy a white shirt.
White shirt.
So anyway, that's how the thing worked and all that stuff. We got pictures in here. I don't know if you want these pictures. I got pictures. I have another book that Pete made up for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give that to you if you want to use that. But in here, there's some of them. Here's my thing. I don't know. What else do you want?
Well,
where are we now?
How about I ask you some other
questions? Sure. Why don't you do that, please?
You've talked about how Anderson Island is a really wonderful place and everything, and you love the people and stuff. But how does the community affect you?
The community was a lovely bunch of people. They were all about our age when they first came out here.
Mm-hmm.
And when we first got out here, the only telephone to the island was an island inter-island service, which is a real crank deal here.
Mm-hmm.
But the only way to get to the island was the telephone company. I put in one telephone line called Anderson Island 1. That was a telephone number. Sylvia Eric, whenever the fire department wanted me or something else, used to drive up and tell me that the fire department wants me, how to get down there and talk to them. You see?
Right.
Until my boss says to me, take a radio with you.
Oh, yeah, that might work
a
little better.
I said, what's the difference? I can't do anything. The fire, whatever you got, I got all my boys trained. What do you want from me? By the time I get over there, it's going to be all over anyway. Take a radio with you. Okay, so they can talk to you in case they need some direction. Okay. So that's how that. And then it was a year later. In fact, the year that we come over, I think a year before that, is when they finally got electricity to the island.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got to start to get the telephone service and stuff like that. But we were met by Lauren Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
By Sylvia and her husband, the mothers, the fathers, the people. The islanders, they were just building Riviera, you know, mm-hmm. at that time. And I was still working, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And the more, when I get work a shift, and I got there, I said, I'm going to go to Anderson Island. It's an entirely new year, a different world.
Mm-hmm.
I used to feel, and when Ruth got hurt and she got in the accident, or whatever she had, surgery, I have to beg the doctors to take, you want me to take my wife home and get her well? Let me convalesce and her at home. Take her home. And the minute she got to that ferry landing there, mm-hmm. Keith Sterling was on the boat at that time. Mm-hmm. He saw us coming. He stopped everybody from going on and Billy put us on first. You know, I mean, it's just the neighbor to neighbor, the love that everybody has for each other.
Mm-hmm.
The community club was really great. People were so outgoing, you know, took us in. Couldn't wait to do something for anybody. And we did the same thing to everybody else. That's what got us. And Riviera was just building up. We were starting the golf course, you know. And I had a new world for me because I retired. I needed something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the fire department was a challenge as far as that's concerned. It was just great.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started to build a fire station, Frank Hicks, who and his wife Mary Lee, before she died over here, the contractor we got to build the station was also building Frank's house.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Hicks and his wife stopped the work on their house so we could build the fire station.
Really?
Really.
Huh.
They were up there almost every day, painting, shoveling, taking dirt out, taking rubbish out,
wow.
Brought us lunches. They were really contributed their whole life, love, and everything else to the fire station.
Wow, that's really cool.
To get into the fire service, Max Stockinger,
mm-hmm.
who I made my assistant chief, who had a little bit of knowledge about fire service, spent his whole life with us. We went and got the equipment. Frank Macaluso, mm-hmm. who was a retired Tacoma firefighter. We went and got the trucks up at Bremerton
mm-hmm.
and brought them home and got them all squared away. We went to the Tacoma Fire Department where he had these friends, and I bought used hose for 50 cents a foot, which would probably cost $10 a foot, you know, at that time, because the fire service, after 5 years, whatever hose you have has to be declared obsolete, so they can buy a new hose.
Uh-huh.
Most of the wear, the normal wear and tear on heavy fire service, it takes its toll on fire hose.
Uh-huh.
It would have been perfect for us.
Right.
So we bought all that stuff and loaded it up. Couldn't have done anything without John, of course, Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Nelson, who was an asset, he and his wife, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All these wonderful people. They come down and helped out all the time. Everybody was there. It was great.
Were there any like specific island events or anything that you would partake in? Like
we were involved in everything.
In everything.
In everything. Yeah, we of course we went into the Historic Society. We became charter members when that first started.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked out. Ruth was up there as a treasurer for 4 years up there. I was involved in all the social activities over here, you know,
mm-hmm.
both in Riviera and outside of Riviera. I was served on the board for 4.5 years in Riviera. I was president for 2 years. You know, it's just wonderful, all these things. The sheriff, Bob Cullen, when we first moved here, he was a special hire. I think he only worked about 40 hours a week or 60 hours a week. No, he worked about 20 hours a week. And he had the same love of the island that we had. He wore a uniform, he had a gun, and he would be at the ferry mm-hmm. every time we come in. And if somebody come off there walking a hippie or anything else, he'd always ask him, what are you doing here? Who are you going to see? You don't have anybody here? Get back on the ferry,
mm-hmm.
which was against the law.
Right.
Those are the types of people we had, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The very fact on that 9-car ferry that we first come over on, with Sam and his brother John Tazarek. Ruth used to drive that ferry. She'd climb up there, Sam would always have a drive the ferry coming over. She loved them. And then there was, of course, Sam Clarence
mm-hmm.
and Ivo.
Oh, God.
If you got a beer, as soon as they cast off, they were in somebody's car having a beer. Both of them, drunk or skunk. And everything worked, you know. One thing about it, Sam and John would work to 1, 2 o'clock in the morning getting everybody off the island. Nobody stayed over.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. They'd work all night. And that was a private contract. That was their own boat.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that, you know. Go for mm-hmm. them. When we started the farm, the garden clubs, you know, the fairs. We have the best island fairs in the world. The best apple squeezes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The best barbecues. That's another thing. The people that turn out for these events, they love them.
Mm-hmm.
When Jim Ray was alive and all the guys that helped pick the apples, Fred, China chicken coop of the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Fred Henry, mm-hmm. anyway. We used to go around every autumn and trim all the apple trees. See?
Mm-hmm.
And when Jim died, nobody took care of him anymore, so that's why we have to go off island, you see, because
mm-hmm.
they all got bugs and stuff in them all that time. Hundreds and hundreds of apple trees. We had. We should take pride in doing that all this time.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a wonderful bunch of people. And if anybody got in trouble, anybody got sick, they were there
mm-hmm.
all the time. That's what brought me together.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I said to my wife, "Hey, sweetie, let's buy a burial plot. Let's go get a cemetery plot because we're going to buy it." And that's what we did.
Mm-hmm.
We bought a cemetery plot from Lorraine Christensen, who was in charge of the cemetery over there. And when my daughter Virginia says, "I want to be buried with you," I had to buy a plot next to her.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "You made me, you take me with you."
Oh, wow.
So mix it up. Get all the ashes mixed up. So that's what it is, as far as I can say. And then, now the property is here. My daughter's going to inherit it, she and her son.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a family trust. It is a family trust right now.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody on the island, regardless of where they are, very few except, have as wonderful a view as we have in front of the Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
That island is so beautiful. This morning, the Danielle went through all last of the afternoon. You know, that beautiful, had a big boom on it, log boom. And it was all painted up pretty red, white, you know, and it was just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then of course your dad and Greg come down there, and as long as I've lived here, I've never been able to catch a fish, but they do, off my shore. And they just yell at them. You know, and your family, and you, my kids, you know, you grew up with me, I grew up with you,
mm-hmm.
and it was just wonderful. You, your mother, your father, Pete and her family and stuff like this, watch the kids grow up. And nothing delighted me more than go on a trip and bring something back for you guys. It was really great. I loved every bit of it.
We appreciated it.
Yeah, I know you guys there, but you know, you and my island family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my other kids were growing up somewhere and trying to make a living someplace else. So, you know, but you were my daily inheritance with the island. I mean, I watched you grow up. I watched your sister grow up. She was 10 years old when she got here.
Yeah.
And you were born, what, 10 years later?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See?
Yep.
And you're wonderful. You're beautiful. Your mama and dad, everybody else. Greg, you couldn't find a better guy than Greg, your sister. And the beautiful grandkids, nephews and nieces that you have. Ron and his family, you know. It's just great. And then the annual August together, see, and you include me in it. That's what I like about this stuff. So you feed me.
We feed you.
Now, what else you got there?
So what was going on when Riviera was developing, as far as other islanders were concerned, and what was... I heard that there was a lot of opposition with it coming. And stuff.
Well, of course there was opposition with coming, because the people that opposed it were the ones that sold them the property.
Uh-huh.
How about that?
Yeah.
That's something. What are they doing up there? It's no longer your property. Higgins Cove, Higgins Ranch,
Hopkins Ranch?
Yeah, and all that stuff over here. And then, of course, we had Carl Carlson. And Mary Ann, his wife,
uh-huh.
and the other ones took over the burger barn, you know, stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
After they took over, who had it?
I don't know.
Somebody had it before them. And anyway, Judy maybe did it. You know, no, see, the house was still there. The woman that Ted. Okay, I think of it. Anyway. They had nice burgers. Everybody went down there, the big berry patch right there.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, too, that I didn't know when I was a chief over here, we had the fire in Judy's house. Nobody ever told me there was a creek behind there.
Oh, no.
I didn't know about it until afterwards.
Because
I was just new here.
Right.
When we were fighting that fire over there, the closest hydrant was a standpipe right up by Riviera Drive, Country Club Drive. We had a drive up there. And put water, 600 gallons in the tank, and by that time the fire had accelerated again.
Oh, for sure.
Thank you.
Oh, that's...
So, yes, thank you. So, there was a lot of things to be done. And I was happy to be involved in helping train, and nothing could have been done without the people who volunteered. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing. They were so wonderful. And all this stuff, and then the icing on the cake, when they named the fire station after me. Who the hell in the world would have that done? Where but on Anderson Island? The Morris Krepke Fire Station? How about that?
That's That's something.
Yeah, it is. I'm so proud of it. I sent copies of everything to everybody in the world. I'm so proud of it. Yeah.
So after people sold their property and realized that something's going on here, what did they do about it?
They opposed everything on there until little by little they were invited up to the Riviera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, offered to have a breakfast up there and stuff like that to come up. And at that time, it was awfully hard to get cooks. The first cook up there, I think, her husband John C's. Rilla McFarlane's sister.
Mm-hmm.
Who's that?
I don't know.
Come on.
I don't know.
She had her husband John. They were cooks for them. Anyways, he was the first cook up there.
Mm-hmm.
But the restaurant was never meant to be a restaurant. It was meant to be a snack bar, and that's the type of equipment they put in there.
Uh-huh.
So when you put in a hot dog stand and things like this and expect to have full 7-course dinners out of them, Myrna Rick.
Myrna Rick.
Okay. Was the first one. And then they had a whole procession of cooks in there, but never improved the cooking facilities.
Uh-huh.
You see. Then you had the first general manager over there, which was Glenn Barton,
mm-hmm.
who was a drunk in no sense of the word, in every sense of the word. He and Les, whatever his name was, they put in the water system over here. And it was their pride and joy to order everybody around.
Mm-hmm.
They were building up the golf course. And if it wasn't for Roy, what was his name, the golf pro, he was an extension agent for the University of Washington. Roy, well, I'm telling Tara, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. Sometimes.
But anyway, he was an expert on golf courses and greens,
uh-huh.
worldwide renowned. And he put that golf course up and mm-hmm. fixed it up and taught him how to do this stuff. And only gave him out of here, which all he wanted was a free membership, a lifetime membership.
Wow.
Roy Goss.
Okay.
He was an excellent person, wonderful people. And he was the one that started the first salmon bakes over here, he and the sailboat crew, the fishing crew.
Uh-huh.
That's where they used to hold them down at his house all the time until they moved them up. Gave them to Ralph Christensen one time,
mm-hmm.
and Ralph had them down at his house. And then they got so many people down there, they moved it up to the farm.
Up to the farm.
Yeah. But that's been a fantastic annual event.
So when did the salmon bake start?
In the mid-60s, early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And we built that good thing over there, and I got involved in the Historical Society, and so was Ruth. And we put on the salmon bake several times, apple squeezes, got involved in that, loved it. It was great, all those wonderful people. And Chet Palmer,
mm-hmm.
wonderful mechanic, great welder. When we first started the salmon bake, they had a hand crank deal
mm-hmm.
for squeezing. And a crippled fellow from Stillicum come over here, a fellow by the name of Johnson, who was a relative of the Johnson brothers that operated the general store at DuPont.
Mm-hmm.
They lived in Stillicum. Well, he was in a motorized wheelchair coming in.
Uh-huh.
But he brought over this apple squeezer, and he put a motor on it.
Mm-hmm.
See? So there wasn't all that work.
Right.
Oh, stuff like that. And Chet saw that, and he started building them up, little by little by little by little.
Uh-huh.
So he built the latest one that we have here. He put the donkey ears on there and stuff like that. And we dedicated it to him and everything else. And yeah, now it's a beautiful thing. Yeah, Chet did all that work.
Yeah.
Chet Palmer. And, of course, Martha Smith's husband, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
He was involved. He and Chet were very good friends. And Bob was the president of the Historical Society a couple of years. So everybody that came up there did something good.
Mm-hmm.
Little by little. We got all those apples we put in there, those apple orchards, where we used to have to go out. The Historical Society Museum contributes almost $10,000 to the upkeep of the farm.
Mm-hmm.
All the money, except for buying new stuff, and they all work as volunteers. Nobody takes a nickel
mm-hmm.
and does all that work over there. Gene Gordon and Earl Gordon did all that fine work to identify every piece of artifact we have up there, all those antiques.
Yep.
Handwritten, all that stuff over there, cleaned the houses, got the chicken coop cleaned up, they're going to make a kitchen out of it now.
Mm-hmm.
Got it all volunteer work.
Mm-hmm. And where could you
no
imagine
place,
getting
no
that
place.
Much community
no,
support
no,
for the
no,
like
no,
that?
Because we are so isolated, but open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
When I bring people,
about having all that water.
That's right. When I bring my friends over here, I give them two tours. One's a 75 tour without going to the dump. $1.50 for going to the dump. When I take them around the island. That's exception fee. And 75 cents extra to go to the dump and see what they did. Look at what your dad did.
Uh-huh.
And what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And your dad, he so enjoys his work because he knows he's doing something capable of enhancing the island.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as beat up as he is, he's really a great guy.
He's a really great guy.
I remember when he got hurt that time, when he almost fell off the roof when we were building that addition up at Riviera.
Uh-huh.
And it just broke everybody's heart. He almost fell off the roof, we couldn't figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a fight with your mother all the time
mm-hmm.
to get the Social Security in there. She wouldn't take the charity.
Mm-hmm.
And your dad needed that information, needed that work, needed the money.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I'm proud of, when Gary got hurt, and his house was just barely finished. I went up to Riviera and I got every Allied trade breaker that lived on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And we had about 40 people
mm-hmm.
of every walk of life. And we come down here and we wired and put up everything. And
really?
Absolutely.
I don't remember that.
We did all this work over here.
Oh, wow.
With people stumbling over them.